any case, as Evald Novotný said, in the past decades, I have been a very frequent visitor to Vienna, in particular when working as Commissioner for Enlargement, and I'm today very honored to speak to such a distinguished and international audience. Vienna has always been a hub between the East and the West, politically and economically. While the economic transformation of Austria's neighboring countries has been a fascinating process and by and large a success story, it is equally remarkable how well the Austrian economy was able to adjust to it and to turn it into an East-West success story. Let me begin with one of the Austrian founding fathers of modern economics, a former finance minister of this country, by the way, as you well know, certainly, Joseph Schumpeter, who was perhaps a better economist than finance minister. In his book, Das Wesen des Geldes, and if I read my German correctly, Wesen has a double meaning, first system, but second also being. He wrote, Der Zustand des Geldwesens eines Volkes ist ein Symptom aller seiner Zustände. Those who speak German or understand German even less than I do, it means the condition of the monetary system of a nation is a symptom of all its conditions. And Schumpeter went on to relate this to human condition. Nichts sagt so deutlich aus welchem Holz ein Volk geschnitzt ist, wie das, was währungspolitisch tut. Nothing shows us clearly what kind of wood a nation is cut from than what it does in monetary policy. Ladies and gentlemen, more than 80 years later in our monetary union, economic and monetary union, you may ask from what kind of fabric Europe is cut. Across Europe, we are seeing a support fatigue on the one side and a reform fatigue on the other. Many ask, will this crisis never end? Are the support measures necessary? Are the reforms too demanding? Is the European response on the right track? Let me elaborate on these questions. It is no surprise to you that I say that we are on the right track for the reasons I want to outline to you now. It has been necessary to take immediate action of financial support and equally of reform and adjustment in the countries facing a sovereign default or a banking meltdown. We must be firm in requiring full implementation of the reform measures, but we also need to be patient since some measures may require time to show effect. To understand our response, let's take a look back in time. Over the last decades, the European economy has grown together with a particular strong interdependence in the euro area, what Martin Wolf just called a system riddled with externalities. Our product and financial markets have been largely integrated. The Southern enlargement first, and the Eastern enlargement later on implied that the economies in the South and in the East were catching up, which in turn required economic adjustment in the so-called old member states. The introduction of the euro provided further benefits for the catching up economies. The euro allowed better access to international capital markets, while for the trade-oriented economies, it reduced their transaction costs. In the pre-crisis period, the euro area as a whole enjoyed macroeconomic stability with stable inflation and some improvement in fiscal policy. However, inside the euro area, macroeconomic imbalances were built up over the last decade. Our integrated financial market channeled the savings from countries with slow growth in domestic demand, and credit flowed into housing and other real estate, resulting in unsustainable leverage and asset prices. By 2007-08, the unraveling of the subprime risks triggered the current crisis. At that time, those imbalances in the European Union, in the euro area, were actually at their peak. The financial sector in the EU member states could not absorb the risks it had taken. Subsequently, the public sector stepped in. And in fact, all parts of the economy benefited from the public response, because this did not only involve aid to banks and other financial institutions, but also directly and indirectly to small and medium-sized enterprises and to employers and workers, for instance, by subsidizing shorter working hours, as happened in many member states. The fiscal stimulus measures were coordinated in the European Economic Recovery Plan, which started in the end of 2008, early 2009. Now, our fresh economic forecast confirms that this powerful policy response has paid off and has produced results. The economic recovery in Europe is maintaining its momentum despite quite some external turbulence and uncertainties in the financial markets. The base of the economic recovery is broadening from exports to domestic demand, implying that growth is becoming more balanced and self-sustaining. And next year, 2012, we will reach the pre-crisis level of production in the European Union, of GDP in the European Union. The policy measures made the euro area labor market also remarkably resilient during the recession, with the employment declining clearly less than the output. But it also implies that the recovery in production will now be somewhat faster than the growth of employment. Ladies and gentlemen, most economists agree, even beyond Keynes and Minsky, if I dare to mention these names in Austria, I trust I can mention these names in Austria, that it is the natural role of the public sector to step in when the so-called tail risks materialize, i.e. the very rare but very large risks. In fact, only the public sector has that capacity, but to do so, the public sector needs to be in a healthy condition itself. However, as we know, this was not the case in all euro area or all EU member states, and the crisis exposed those countries where imbalances were large, where public finances were not in a good shape, and where there was a lack of structural reform. Therefore, it is, to my mind, not correct to speak of a crisis of the euro or of the monetary union. It is a crisis, yes, it is a crisis of certain member states with the potential of severe economic ramifications for the rest of the euro area. The value of the euro has not changed over the past year, even though we had vast turbulence in the sovereign debt market. The effective euro exchange rate last Friday was almost precisely the same as in the beginning of May last year. And second, we have contained the crisis into the three countries now in EU IMF programs. This is evident both from the sovereign bond spreads and the overall economic recovery in Europe. While counterfactual scenarios are always difficult to construct, there is, in my view, no doubt that without the economic and monetary union, the global financial crisis would have unleashed a series of devastating currency crises in Europe, the euro has saved us from that by serving as a protective shield. This has also been the case for Austria, where Austria has greatly benefited from the stability brought by the euro, as well as the new chances and opportunities provided by the Eastern enlargement, which you have been able to capitalize on. And when crisis hit many neighboring countries, especially in the east of Austria, east and southeast Austria, Austria was not drawn into this. And I dare to say that the euro played a significant role in avoiding this fate. So where do we stand today as to our crisis response? With the example of the Lehman catastrophe, we have seen what devastating consequences a default can cause, not only for direct creditors, but what is important, also for third parties who could be hit by spillover effects in our integrated economy. Precisely to prevent another downward spiral getting out of control, we needed to prevent Greece from defaulting, which we did in May last year. The then ad hoc financial assistance package was tied to strong conditionality of reforms and of debt reduction. But we also needed to prevent contagion, and a week later we created the temporary financial backstops, the European Financial Stability Mechanism and Facility, to manage any further sovereign financing problems which could threaten financial stability in Europe. Later last year, we also decided on the basic principles of a permanent stability mechanism, which will replace the temporary ones in 2013. In December last year, the temporary facilities were brought into action when we needed to grant conditional financial assistance to Ireland, and last Monday a similar decision was made on a program for Portugal. These decisions, together with the very substantial reform measures taken in both many program countries and non-program countries, particularly on fiscal consolidation, as well as the very responsible policy approach taken by the European Central Bank, have allowed us to contain the sovereign debt crisis into the three countries in the program. Some worry that this is not without risks for the creditor countries. At the same time, we need to see the vastly greater risk of inaction if we had not given the comprehensive policy response. Devastating risks would have materialized immediately. And this is my response to those wary of support. The rationale of our strategy is indeed to prevent the great risk of a financial meltdown and all its economic ramifications. We have contained but not banned that risk yet. And my response to those wary of reform in the program countries is that reducing the excessive level of public debt does indeed require major efforts on several fronts to reach the necessary primary surplus in fiscal policy over an extended period of time. We have relevant positive examples that reforms can be done. I give you three. Belgium in the 1990s for almost a decade was able to maintain a primary surplus of over 5% of GDP. It is challenging, but at the same time doable. Or take Latvia or Romania. Both receive financial assistance tied to our balance of payment program under conditionality related to our treaty provisions. Latvia faced a collapsing economy after the burst of the construction and financial sectors, an oversized public administration, ballooning deficits and quickly increasing debt and unemployment. in spite of fiscal consolidation measures amounting to over 15% of GDP since the end of 2008, growth has picked up in mid last year. Exports are now booming and unemployment is decreasing rather quickly, although it still remains very high. At the same time, Romania has, among other things, implemented a far-reaching pension reform. The old system would have led to a gradually increasing fiscal deficit of the pension system only. That would have grown from just above 1% of GDP 2 years ago to over 7%, almost 8% of GDP by 2035. The reform in place since January stabilizes the fiscal position of the pension system in Romania. Romania has meanwhile been able to access financial markets, and for Latvia we expect this to happen in the second half of this year, ahead of the schedule. In view of the engagement of the Austrian banks in Eastern Europe, these are very encouraging developments. And I'm glad to add that the banks have contributed to this with their responsible behavior, especially through the Vienna Initiative. Of course, it is the obligation of the recipients of the financial assistance to do their utmost to deliver on the program. It is clear that Greece has to seriously reinforce the implementation of budgetary savings and the economic reforms before any new steps may be taken. Likewise, it needs to launch its privatization program to reduce its formidable debt burden. These are a matter of urgency, and I expect new measures to be announced shortly by the Greek government. It is also clear that financial assistance is a measure only needed when other measures have failed, because its use implies that policies have not been appropriate for a long time before. This has to be addressed, and this is now being addressed in the European Union. It may sound simple, but it is still essential to recall that prevention is always better than correction, not to speak of outright crisis management. And therefore, we are now in the process of reforming economic governance in Europe. Last September, the Commission introduced a legislative package consisting of three main elements. First, we need to strengthen the Stability and Growth Pact in order to prevent unsustainable fiscal positions and to correct such positions promptly should they nevertheless emerge. Second, to introduce the broadened surveillance of macroeconomic imbalances and divergences in competitiveness with corrective actions recommended and taken if excessive imbalances are identified. And third, to create a more effective enforcement mechanism, say a semi-automatic sanctions regime with earlier and more automatic sanctions in the case of violation of these rules. I know many people doubt that much will change. I have to disagree on that. I'm fully confident that we will finally end up with tough fiscal rules, with a new emphasis on high debt levels, backed up by a much stronger sanctions regime than up until now, and also by an effective framework to dealing with broader macroeconomic imbalances. And thus, we should be able to prevent the crisis, like in Greece, which was a fiscal crisis, or like in Ireland, which was much more related to broader macroeconomic imbalances. I trust that the Council of the Member States and the European Parliament can agree on the package in June, so that we will have the new rules in place shortly. Strong national fiscal frameworks are also a necessary element of the governance reform. Austria provides a good example in this regard with its National Stability Pact created in 1999 and improved over time. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, to conclude, to my mind, it has been clear for long that the current state of the crisis is a severely intertwined combination of a sovereign debt crisis and banking sector fragilities. It is equally clear that we cannot solve one without solving the other. We need to resolve both in parallel. And that's what we are doing. And let me summarize what this means. First, we have prevented a financial meltdown that would have resulted if Greece had defaulted. Second, we have contained the sovereign debt crisis into the three countries in the program, whose public finances, banking sectors, and growth policies are being profoundly revamped. Third, EU member states at large are pursuing fiscal consolidation across Europe to reduce fiscal deficits and to put the debt levels on a downward path. And fourth, we have created a new architecture of financial regulation and supervision with new tough rules and competent supervisory authorities. And fifth, we are indeed about to conclude a major reform of economic governance in order to prevent imprudent fiscal policies and detrimental macroeconomic imbalances in the European Union. We are not there yet, and the work must go on. The coming weeks before the summer recess will be crucial in terms of completing our crisis response concerning the banking stress tests and parallel recapitalization, concerning the creation of the European Stabilization Mechanism and reinforcement of the EFSF, and concerning the next steps that need to be taken in Greece and concerning Greece. There will be difficult decisions ahead, but we are making progress. Let's not forget that the most telling evidence of progress is the economic recovery we are now witnessing in the great majority of the member states, Austria included. I have no doubt that with sufficient stamina and determination, we shall overcome also the remaining challenges. Hence, my response to Joseph Schumpeter's question, what is Europe made of, is the following. Europa ist aus hartem Holz geschnitzt. Europe is cut from tough wood. Vielen Dank.